Welcome to our final presentation for Chapter 4 on mutual funds. And in this presentation, we're going to do our best to answer the question, okay, Piano, how do I pick a mutual fund? It ain't easy. Stick with us. First, let's take a look at some fund families. Fund families, starting on slide 62, exist when one investment company manages a group of mutual funds. See, 50, 60, 70 years ago, a company might have had one or two mutual funds. But then the mutual funds started to replicate, and one company would have this fund, and so that other companies would have to have it. And as we saw, it just exploded. So now you have these large fund families with dozens of funds. Some have hundreds of funds. And, of course, every fund in the family varies in their objective. You can move your money from one fund to another almost always without any charge. But if it's in a taxable account, you're going to generate a taxable transaction. You're going to have a capital gain or a capital loss, and the IRS is going to want to know about it. Now, as we saw, we discussed in the very first presentation about people moving things around too much. Mutual fund companies started to charge excessive transfer or excessive redemption fees within the fund family. And that was done to discourage people from using mutual funds to jump in and out of the market or do what we said, where they would try to make a few pennies off of a change in the marketplace. But normally, the companies are not going to charge you another sales charge. Once you're in the fund family, you can move around. If the funds are in a 401k or an IRA or a Roth IRA, then there's no charge whatsoever. There's no taxable transaction. They are only taxed when you take them out, if it's a 401k, a traditional IRA. And in the case of the Roth IRA, there's no taxes if you do what you're supposed to do. In a very good article, 1995 or something like that, Forbes said, choose a family, not a fund. No, maybe it was 94. Yeah, and I like that saying. You don't hear it too often, but I do like it. You want to find a family that has a wide selection of high quality funds that you can live with for the rest of your investing career. And as you become closer and closer towards a time when you need to be more conservative, you can slide down that risk versus reward spectrum that we've discussed. So let's take a look at slide number 63 that shows the top 10 mutual fund companies. Now, the problem with this is it's very hard to get good data. Different sources will have the top 10 listed differently. And there's no doubt that Vanguard is now number one. But you'll see other companies say, oh no, Fidelity's still number one. Well, that's with actively managed funds. If you take away the index funds, sure, Vanguard's not number one, but you have to count the ETFs and the index funds, so Vanguard is definitely number one. Now, whether or not Fidelity or American are two and three, they bounce back and forth, so it's not that important. But Vanguard, based in outside Philadelphia, King of Prussia, Malvern area, you don't know where it is. I do, because I grew up around there. They're now the number one company, by far. Fidelity and American, Fidelity's in the Boston area, a large area for very popular area for mutual fund companies. American is based actually in Los Angeles, if you can believe that. But all these companies, folks, they have in offices around the world. PIMCO, Pacific Investment Company, is based in Newport Beach. And they have taken it on the chin the last few years because of a very high-profiled individual who left the company by the name of Bill Gross. And we'll discuss Mr. Gross later on when we get to bonds. Franklin Templeton, an excellent company, folks. Very good funds. We took a look at one of their funds that we'll talk about Sir John Templeton when we get to these sections on stocks. T. Rowe Price, based in Baltimore, an excellent company, been around for a long time, one of the first companies to go outside the United States. And then Columbia, I feel sorry for people of Columbia Funds. Their annual reports usually go something like this. Yeah, you know, we really didn't do very well last year, but next year is going to be better. BlackRock, what a smart company. Ooh, boy, are they. They're no dummies. They're the ones who have the contract with the federal government to run the TSP. And yes, you will see that the fees are very, very low, but when you have several million ready customers at your beckoned call, yeah. J.P. Morgan, Chase, you know who they are, the bank company. They went out and bought a bunch of mutual funds, and now they're the ninth largest. And Oppenheimer, based in Denver, is an old, you know, old company. They've been around a long time, since the 40s, I think. And they have some very good funds, some very good global funds also. So what we would do now in the face-to-face class is we would take a look at First Fidelity and their offerings, then Vanguard, and then American. And why is that? Because Fidelity has over 500 funds, depending on how you count them. Plus, if you go to their website, depending on how you go to their website, they will allow you to buy virtually any mutual fund through their website. That's how powerful they are. So there are a few links on, if I can't show it to you here, it won't, maybe I can do that. I got to think about that. But I want you to use the links on the class website to go take a look at all the offerings. It's overwhelming. That's why I like to start with Fidelity. You watch the student's eyes, and you can just see that deer in the headlights there. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it, folks. That's what people are up against when they go to pick a mutual fund. There are just so many choices within one company. And if you called up Fidelity, you know, they'll go, well, you know, we think this one's okay, this one's all right. But they don't want to give you any recommendations because they may or may not be licensed individuals, and you have to be licensed before you can, in other words, you have to be a stockbroker. Yeah, before you can recommend an investment for somebody. So what they may do is say, well, who's your broker? We have a brokerage service, Fidelity, I forget what it's called, Fidelity Brokerage Services. And then you'll be dealing with an individual broker, but then you'll, you know, be paying more, you'll be paying for the advice. So after we throw those 500 funds at people, in Fidelity funds, we then take a look at Vanguard, which has about 200 or so. I think they're up to about 200 or so. And that's, you know, overwhelming. And then I like to show them American. Because American, even though it's one of the oldest companies and one of the largest, they've really resisted the urge to come up with dozens and dozens of new funds. They have about 40. And recently, for years, they would come out with one every 10 years or so. Recently, they've come out with a few new ones, which are very interesting. Some of them are just regular old bond funds, not very exciting. But the cool thing about American is that they all fit on one page. So in the face-to-face class, we can show you the spectrum of risk versus return. They start with growth funds. They don't have any aggressive growth funds. And then they go down through their growth and income, equity income, balanced, and then the bond funds, and then the money market. And you can see the lifetime returns falling as you reduce your risk. I think it's a really good practice. So check out their website. And the one thing I really wish I could show you, which I can show you in the face-to-face class, is their 2008 returns. It's ugly, folks. You know, they're not alone, folks. Don't just blame American. It's ugly. But what you see, the one-year return, it is so perfect. It shows that the growth funds lost 50%. The growth in incomes lost 34%, 37%, 38%. The equity income funds lost 30%. You see? That's what we talked about, right? The balance funds would lose, I forget, they're about 28-30%. The bond funds would lose 15%. The Treasury bond fund actually went up because people flew to Treasuries, but the other bond funds went down. And then the money market basically did nothing because cash doesn't go down. It doesn't go up very fast, but it doesn't go down. And so that's such a great graphic, although I'm not really supposed to put it on the website. You'll notice that all these are links to their websites because it's copyrighted material. They don't want people using their material. They want it on their website. They want to control it. And that's perfectly legal, folks. There's nothing wrong with that. But I can show it in the classroom that I'm allowed to do that. We're allowed to do that. I forget all the rules, but you're allowed to use fair use, and that comes under the educational fair use policy. But if you want to see it, contact me and we'll set up an appointment, and I can use Skype or something like that to show it to you. Slide 6. So go in and to the class website and take a look at the fund families. And then I've thrown in Dodge and Cox, which is one of my favorite fund families. They're a little strange, though. They're a little strange. Check them out. Slide 64. All right, so let's take a look at investor services. One of the things we said about mutual funds at the very beginning is that they're just very easy. Once you've chosen one, yes, the services that they have, and and you don't have to do anything. You basically let them pick and choose the investments. And most all mutual fund companies have automatic investment plans, either through your paycheck or your bank account, sending fixed amounts of money, $50 a month, $100 a month. This has a term, which is, people don't remember this term because it doesn't really ring a bell, but it's called dollar cost averaging. And it's a very powerful technique. We're going to return to dollar cost averaging in a few slides, and then we're going to return to it again towards the end of the semester. Pay yourself first. You might have taken the 121 class where we discussed that. In my humble opinion, this is the absolute best way to invest in a mutual fund. You don't worry if it's a good time or a bad time to invest. Every month is a good time to invest. $50 comes out of your paycheck or your checking account. And by the way, it is practically the only way that most people will ever invest. You hear people say, well, I want to wait till I have $5,000 and then I'm going to play the market. When are you going to have $5,000 laying around? Start putting away $50 a month, $100 a month. And then what happens automatically is that they will reinvest. Slide 65. The mutual fund service that enables shareholders to automatically buy additional shares in the fund through reinvestment of dividends, interest, capital gains. And this allows an investor to earn fully compounded rates of return. Unless the investor needs the income, it's always a good idea to reinvest your dividends, your interest, your capital gains received from mutual fund. And by the way, unless you tell them otherwise, they will automatically reinvest those. If you want the income, you have to say, please don't automatically reinvest. They know that virtually everybody, doesn't need the income. They're saving for a later date and that they want to reinvest. But if you do need the income, then you tell them, send me a check or more likely electronically deposit it. And speaking of electronically depositing it, slide 66, when you go to redeem the shares, it is almost, unless you're setting up for, a down payment on a house, something like that, but when you think about retirement, it almost always makes sense for you to now take the money out slowly over the next 20, 30 years. Because you put it in over 20, 30, 40 years, you're going to be taking it out slowly to live off of. And that's called a systematic withdrawal plan. The money is transferred electronically directly to your checking account. They don't write a check. I mean, you can have them do that, especially if you need, if it's a big college education or whatever, or a home purchase. But normally, no, you're saving for retirement, and so you're going to take that money. Anyhow, now, here's the deal, right? You put in $100 a month for 30, 40 years, and you take out $2,000, $3,000 a month for the rest of your life. Don't believe me, huh? Well, you wait. When we see these hypothetical illustrations, you're going to be surprised. Exactly. And we'll learn how to take the money out later on when we get to the end of the semester. But right now, you're going to see some hypotheticals that are pretty darn powerful. The conversion privilege, also called the exchange privilege, we've already discussed briefly. This allows you to move from one fund to another within the same family of funds. That's why Forbes says choose a family, not a fund, because later on your investment time horizon will change, your aggressive versus conservative stance will change, and so you'll be able to just move from one fund to another. Now remember, if it's in a retirement account, 401k, traditional IRA, Roth IRA, there's no tax consequences. But if it's in a regular account, the IRS is going to say, hey, you sold one investment, you're buying another investment. We want you to claim a loss or a gain and pay taxes on that. Make sense? Yeah, it does make sense. That's the law. How do you purchase the mutual funds? Well, if it's a closed end or an ETF, you do it through the stock exchange. But if it's an open end, you can do it through your broker or directly from the investment company. The best way, in my humble opinion, as I said, is the automatic contributions through your payroll, through your checking account. And then the sell options, again, are closed end and ETFs through the stock exchange. And open end, you call up your broker or you go on the mutual fund website. And the best way, in my humble opinion, is to withdraw the money over time. And as we said, remember, the companies are smart, like Vanguard and Fidelity. If you buy their ETFs through their brokerage firms, then you don't pay any commissions, which is that's pretty sharp, pretty smart marketing. Slide 68, taxes. Well, we've sort of danced around this subject. We got to think about taxes, folks. Well, dividends from income are normally taxed as income. 20% max, 15% is typical, 15% and 5% minimum, depending on your tax bracket. And taxable capital gains distributions are taxed as capital gains. There's short-term and then there are long-term, but most will be long-term. Again, 20% max, that's for people in the very high income brackets. 15% is typical, 5%. Reinvested dividends and capital gains are still taxable transactions in a regular account. If it's in a retirement account, you don't worry about it. So save your year-end statements. People get angry, especially when the market goes down. Their mutual fund distributes capital gains, dividends, and they have to pay taxes on that. And they say, what are you talking about? I lost money. And so they complain to their congressperson who says, well, someday we might deal with that by making paper profits not taxable until you actually sell your mutual fund shares. Forget it. Forget it. It's not going to happen. It would be an accounting nightmare. It would be great for CPAs and tax preparers. But don't, it's not going to happen. Just deal with it, pay. It's not going to be much, folks. The taxes you're going to pay on your distributions in your regular account, at first they're going to be nothing. 10, 20 bucks a year, maybe a little bit more. Once they get to be real money, once they get to be serious change, congratulations. Because you're doing okay, folks. You're doing pretty darn good. If all of a sudden you're getting a big tax bill, that means you have got a lot of money in your regular account. So don't complain. And if you do complain, I have a great way that you don't have to pay any taxes. Give it all to me, and I'll pay the taxes. Yes, it's a little story behind that. A guy I ride bikes with was always complaining about all the taxes he had to pay on the gobs of money he made from being in the right place at the right time during the tech bubble. And I finally said to him, I said, I got a great way. You don't have to pay any taxes. He goes, How do you do it? I say, donate it all to Julian's Anchorage Battered Women's Shelter. And his wife said, that's it. That's right. You stop complaining. You are one of the lucky ones. I said the right thing at the right time. It was great. Slide 69. Okay. How do we research these things? Well, one of the most important documents is called the prospectus. The prospectus. I guess the plural will be prospecti, right? But I like to say prospectus. And we pass them out in the face-to-face class, but you're going to look them up on the website, because on the website are links to the different mutual fund companies. I think six, but there are dozens, folks. You don't have to limit the ones I put there. It describes the risk factors, the fund's past performance, the types of investments, the information about the dividends, the distribution, the taxes, the fund's management. Nobody reads them! Nobody reads them! But they're not that hard. Check out a few. Once it gets to be past the first few pages, you'll go, yeah, this is pretty boring. They're great for insomnia. And you have insomnia, you just pick up a prospectus and... Anyway, what's the one that you're going to spend more time with? That's the annual report. The annual report, and if you want one, hard copy, contact me. You can just call the mutual fund companies and order them. They'll send them to you, but they'd rather download them as PDF files, right? Because they don't have to do postage, they don't have to print the darn things. So download choose a couple of mutual funds that you want to research, because that's your assignment. And hopefully you'll enjoy it. And if you don't, that's a good sign that you don't really want to be an investor. Or maybe you're just too darn busy. I shouldn't presume to know. But if you do enjoy it, if this really interests you, in my humble opinion, that's a really good sign. That's a really good sign that this is something that you will enjoy. Because if you don't enjoy it, folks, it's going to be painful. Trust me, it's going to be painful. At least that's what people who don't enjoy investing have told me. It's a pain in the patootie. Okay, well, not for me. I think I told you when she's retired now, but the vice president of the company I worked for as a computer consultant and showed me the prospectus that of one of the mutual funds she was recommending, I was really excited. I read this whole thing. This is really interesting, because I never trusted the bums on Wall Street, and this is a company that's actually done very well and been honest and ethical. Wow. And so I went back and I said, "Do you have the other one you were talking about, the other prospectus? I want to read that one too." And she looked at me and she said, "You read the prospectus?" I said, "Yeah, I read the prospectus. I read the whole darn thing." She goes, "I don't know anybody who's ever read a prospectus. I've never read a prospectus." You know, nobody reads. Well, what are you going to do? Read the prospectus. Read the annual report and do the assignments. Slide number 70, financial publications. Okay, we talked about Morningstar and Lipper, and they are the two big mutual fund research companies. Morningstar is a little bit more popular and a little bit, I don't know. They're okay. They're good. Don't get me wrong. I look their stuff up. Lipper is more serious, and you got to pay, and you got to go to the library. But then there's Business Week and Forbes and Kiplinger's and Money, and they have these surveys that rank funds, and they give them stars, and you got to be careful, folks. They sometimes glow over a company that does really, really well one year, and then, of course, the next year, whatever. So I like to look at 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and you don't see that in these mutual fund surveys. They go, "That's too long." No, it's not. No, it is not. I want to see a company that has consistently done well for decades. And they're out there, folks. Slide number 71, the websites. Well, Morningstar's website is rather good, but be careful, because it's going to continue to try to get you to sign up for premium services. If you want to, it's up to you. Business Week and MarketWatch has actually gotten better, whereas finance.yahoo.com has gotten awful. It really used to be one of the best, if not the best, financial website out there, free website. But it is horrible now, and I just don't understand what they think they're going to do. I don't know. Verizon's going to buy them or has bought them. I don't know. I don't know. And you see the comments. Every one of them is horrible. This is horrible. When are you going to go back to... What is the matter with you people? What do you think you're doing? And yet, there they go. Now, the mutual fund companies now have excellent websites. See, when the internet was, you know, brand new in the late 90s, they really sunk a ton of money in, especially Vanguard. Vanguard had this Vanguard University, or I forget what it was called. It was really good. And then after the 2000 to 2002 debacle, that bear market, they all pulled away. I don't know if the SEC told them to, or I don't know. But now if you go to their websites, they have videos, commentaries, articles. They're good. And some of them are quite good. You know, some of them are, hey, folks, you know, we're not going to sugarcoat this. This is the way investing is. It's up and down. You have to take a long-term investment time horizon. As I said, Dodge & Cox is really strange. They're based in San Francisco, you know, one of the most culturally, you know, sophisticated area. And they all look, the people in the videos, they look like they're from the Midwest. They look like they're from Kansas. And they're down home and they talk kind of. And I can't figure that company out because they're very a good company, folks. Don't get me wrong. But they just have this folksy sort of, and they're based in San Francisco. Figure that one out. So check them out. And then the mother lode, ICI.org. If you're interested in sifting through tons of data, go to ICI.org and have at it. So, okay, all right, Piano, how do I pick a mutual fund? Well, as I said, it's not easy. Pick a mutual fund. For what it's worth, this is my advice. Pick a mutual fund that invests in high-quality stocks or bonds. Now, there's a caveat, right? How do you define quality? One person's quality is somebody else's caca. Is well-diversified across several industries and sectors of the economy because we want diversification. Has a long-term perspective and a manager, or better yet, in my humble opinion, a management team with many years of experience. You want to avoid companies that shuffle their managers like a deck of cards every few years, which I say here is virtually all of them, but the truth is more and more companies are realizing, hey, you know what, this ain't the right way to go. This is what Fidelity was famous for decades. They would just throw people into the mix and say, here you go, kid, here's $1 billion, have at it. And if they did well, great, they got to stick around. If they didn't do well, they're gone in 18 months. Well, that doesn't encourage long-term thinking, does it? You know that if you don't do well in a year, 2 years, you're gone. So what are you going to do? Right, you're going to take high risks, figuring that if you win, great, you get to stick around, you get showered with love and affection and a whole lot of money. And if you don't do well, well, what the hell? You're not going to stick around anyway. So now they realize this is not the best way of doing things. So more and more companies are shifting to that management team where they work together, but they make their own decisions. Most importantly, you want a company, a fund family that's been around for decades and performed consistently well in both good and bad markets. Don't tell me how well you did in a good market, because I ain't interested. I want to know how well you did when the organic matter hit the ventilating device. Think about that one. Yeah, because it's going to happen. We're going to have bad markets. We know this for sure. There's no way to get around them. And so you want a company that plays good defense. I don't know if that's a good analogy. I'm not a big sports fan, but offense wins games, defense wins championships. Have you heard that saying? Yeah, you want companies that do well when times are bad, because they're going to be, and you're going to live through those. If you're consistent, don't panic. Those are the best times to make money. Why? Because you keep putting in the $50, $100. Yeah. So now, slide 73. What we would do in the face-to-face class is we'd pass out some literature and show a single mutual fund, because we got to look at one, right? At least you're going to look at more. But we would look at one that's been around for 82 years, right? And actually more than 82. And it's done 12%. Wait a minute. What do we say about stocks? 8, 9, 10%. We're happy with 8, 9, 10. I'm happy with 8, 9, 10%. And these guys for 82 years have done 12. Right? That's pretty darn good. And we like to learn from the best, so we study them. And in the literature, they ask some very good questions and give you the answers. Because people are worried, as well they should be. And there's an emotional part that we talked about investing. Stocks are very risky. Well, yes, in the short term, but in the long term, no. And they show you that. And what I did is I put that on the website. I want you to take a good look at that. It's called, what is it called? I forget. But it's you'll see it. Risk versus return. I forget exactly what it's called. I can't believe I forget. But you'll see it shows you how you would have done if you just invested for 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, or 10 years. And sure, 1 year you get hammered. One third of the time you lose money. If you go to 3 years, it drops to 14%. You know, 1/7. If you go to 5 years, it drops to, I forget, like 1/16 or something. They drop 12 or something, 1/12, 1/14, 8%. And then if you stuck with it for 10 years, no matter what, you always made money. You see, in the long term, stocks are not that risky. And then it asks the questions, well, what if it's not a good time to invest? Well, when is it ever a good time to invest? The times that people believe are good times to invest are usually the worst times to invest. That's when the market's done 20% for 10 years, like 1999. And so what did they show you? Oh, the benefit of time. I finally remembered it. The first one, the stocks are very risky. The benefit of time is called short term, yes, risky. Long term, no. This one's called worst day, best day. Worst day, best day. What if you invested on the worst day for the past 20 years? What if you invested on the best day? How would you do? So take a look at that. And then what about market downturns? Well, keep a long-term perspective. And on the website are these illustrations that show you the entire 82 and a half years. And then they show you the they show you 30 years at $100 a month, 40 years at $100 a month, 40 years increasing every year by 10 bucks. And then for you folks in your late 40s and 50s, 20 years at $500 a month. Keep a long-term perspective because the markets are going to go down. And this is the good news here, folks. It's called dollar cost averaging. Slide 74. A system of buying an investment at regular intervals with a fixed dollar amount. You see, the cool thing about dollar cost averaging, and this, it took me a while to convince my wife about this, folks, because she was pretty frightened about stock investment. I said, look, Anita, because that's her name, no matter what happens tomorrow when we wake up, there's always good news. Huh? She's like, you're crazy. The market's up, good news! Yippee! Your account is worth more! Right? Your $100 is now $100.20. The market's down. Good news. Why? What are you talking about? Well, no, it is good news. Next month, you're going to get more shares at a lower price when your $50 or $100 comes out of your paycheck or checking account. It's not a guarantee of success if the darn thing keeps going down and down and down and down. Oh, yeah, I'm getting more shares. Whoopee. But it's one of the best ways to take emotion out of the equation. You don't worry about when the best time to invest is. Now's the best time to invest because you got the $50 coming out of your paycheck. And you might remember this. I hope you do. Memorize it. But if you don't, I'll come back to it later on and we'll look at it again. Your average cost per share should be lower than your average price per share. What does that mean? Well, what it means is you're buying more shares when the price is low. You're buying fewer shares when the price is high, because you're always using the same amount. And your average cost per share should be, no guarantee, less than your average price per share. you don't understand. But that's all right. Don't worry about it. Just memorize it, okay? Memorize it. And know that dollar cost averaging is probably the easiest and best way to invest from a practical standpoint, because how many people have $5,000 lying around the house? We got $50 coming out of our paycheck, yeah. And from an emotional standpoint, because we don't worry about if it's a good time or a bad time to invest. Every month is a good time. Slide 75. I've made reference to these, and I want you to take a look at them. Most mutual fund companies have a system for running what are called hypotheticals. They're also called hypothetical illustrations. Now, the problem with these things is to offer these, you have to be licensed. You have to have Series 6 if you're going to do this mutual funds, or Series 7, which means you're a stockbroker. And I am, so I can show them to you. They are examples of returns of investments from lump sum principles or streams of investments. And if you did the future value exercises in Chapter 1, you didn't have to do them, folks. You didn't have to do them. But if you did, that's what we're talking about. Either a lump sum, $10,000 or whatever, or $100 a month. That's called dollar cost averaging, or a combination. They must be approved by the Securities Exchange Commission, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. They must contain disclaimers about past versus future performance, that there's no guarantees, and all the scary stuff. And I want you to take a look at them. And in the face-to-face class, we would run some. And then if you have any you want to run, if you say, well, what happens if I put $200 a month? I can do that for you and throw it up on the website. So check them out. Slide 76. And the cool thing is that the one mutual fund we looked at, it's called Investment Company of America, it's been around since 1934, is not the only one that's done well over 50 years, folks. Here are a couple of dozen that have done exemplary, superlative work over the last 50-plus years. There's Dodge & Cox. Remember I told you Dodge & Cox? Yeah, there's Fidelity. There's Franklin. Oppenheimer, T. Rowe Price, poor Mr. George Putnam rolling in his grave. There's Franklin again, and a Vanguard Windsor Fund, and then here's American. American's got three. American Mutual, Investment Company of America, Washington Mutual, MFS. This is the nation's oldest mutual fund company, MFS. Massachusetts Funded, I forget what it stands for. And then there's another Franklin. Look, Franklin's got five. Look at this utilities fund. They have no business making that much money in a utilities fund. You get 6% from a utilities fund, you're happy as a clam. And these guys have done almost 10. I think they're magicians. And so here are some excellent funds for you to take a look at. But I'm not saying you should invest in these, folks. Some of these are a little, for example, the American funds are all United States based, and that's because they've been around the longest. They have some excellent global funds that I prefer because the world is global and the young folks are not so as frightened by the investing outside the United States. But the reason I show you this is to show you that it is not an aberration. There's not just one fund that's done 12% over 80 years. Here's one, the small cap fund from T. Rowe Price has done almost 13% over 50 years, 60 years. So that's what I'm trying to show you, is that the news is good. There are many good companies out there that have shown themselves to stand the test of time. Okay, I apologize if it sounds like an advertisement, but hey, they've been very, very good to me. So I want to spread the good news. Slide 76. What about the investors? This is going to be a bit of a kick in the teeth, folks. But I got to show you. This is from the ICI, the Investment Company Institute. And it looks a little scary because it looks like math. But really, what is it telling us? It's telling us that the investors do worse than the mutual funds they invest in. Now, wait a minute. How can that be? It's very simple, folks. They wait until the market climbs its wall of beautiful returns. here we are. I wish it would go back a little further, because you see the effect of the internet bubble here, but you see the inflows. This is the inflows, and then if it goes negative, it's outflows. And so what happened is, in the year 1998, 99, people just kept pouring money into the mutual funds, into the stock market. Ooh, is it too late to get in? When you hear people say that, folks, yeah, exactly. Because then what happened? Right, there's the orange is the market returns. We had 2.5, 3 years, basically, 2001, 2002, when the markets went down almost 50% from peak to trough. And then what happens? Right, they pull their money out at the worst possible time the year it turns around, 2003. Right? Exactly. Ooh, is it too late to get out? Yeah, now's when you should be putting your money in. And then sure enough, the market comes back, and sure do the net cash flows come back, right? People put the money back in, and then when the market tanks, ooh, is it too late to get out? And boy, did they take a lot of money out. And then even as the market comes back in 2010, 11, 12, 13, people are still pulling money out. It's not until 2014 that they start putting money in. In 2015 wasn't particularly a very good year. And so now they've been pulling money out. Now, of course, this, you know, doesn't show 2016 yet. It won't until next year, but... You see why I keep hammering away this idea of be prepared? Because if you sell at the bottom, you're shooting yourself. You're basically making sure that you're going to have horrible returns over the long term. That's why dollar cost averaging is so powerful. You ignore what's going on and you say, look, I ain't going to touch this money for 20, 30 years. And you keep investing. Instead of buying high, selling low, which is what most mutual fund investors do, you're buying high sometimes, you're buying low sometimes, but you're not selling until you need the money. And by then, you will have moved it into something hopefully more conservative. Make sense? I hope so. Slide 78. The bottom line on mutual funds. Choose a fund family, stick with them. Reevaluate them periodically, I don't know, once or twice a year, but make changes judiciously and sparingly. Aren't those very good words, judiciously and sparingly? As you approach retirement, migrate from stock funds to bond funds, but don't give up on stocks entirely, and we'll discuss this later on. We're gonna come full circle. We'll come back to this idea. After we've studied for weeks on end stocks and a couple of weeks on bonds, we'll come back to this idea. But through your 401k, through your Roth IRA, dollar cost average, $50 a month, $100 a month, whatever is affordable. But for the most part, forget about them. Don't be one of the mutual fund investors that does worse than your mutual fund. By buying high and selling low. Stick with them. If you've made a good, I mean, if you made a bad choice, you know, you'll know within a couple of years or so. But if you do your research or you trust in an advisor, find a good fund family, stick with them. I think so. Worked for me. Worked so far, so good. And that is our discussion of mutual funds. And you can stop right here, folks. I don't want you to, obviously. I'm not trying to kick you out of class, folks. Please don't get me wrong. But if you do this exercise and you absolutely hate it, it is painful. I hate these numbers. I hate these people. Who are they talking about? Different companies. What is the matter with them? This is boring. This is horrible. Then you can revel in the good news that you don't ever have to do any anymore. You can choose a good fund family, choose some good mutual funds, and forget about investing as a hobby, as an avocation. Hopefully some of you are going to go into the business. I just know it. I feel it in my bones. But if you do enjoy it, and this does make sense to you, great. That's a good sign. Because guess what? We're ready to start the most exciting part of our semester, and that is our introduction to stocks, and then stock valuation, ratio analysis, and dividend discount models, and investor psychology, and efficient markets, and technical and relax. I know I get a little excited, but in our next presentation, we start stocks, a very exciting and illuminating and fun, just brilliant fun, in my humble opinion. Of course, that's somebody who teaches it. Thank you for being in our class. Study hard, bring honor and glory to Southwestern Community College, and amaze your friends and family with your vast knowledge of investing. See you in Chapter 5 on stocks.